Hello and welcome to our next discovery in the Dive and Dig news podcast, where we bring you the latest breakthroughs in the field of maritime archaeology. I'm Dr. Lucy Blue and I represent the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports the development of maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean. This week, my colleague Kathy Giagrandi takes you to Lund University to speak with Dr. Brendan Foley, chief archaeologist excavating an incredible 15th century shipwreck that lies on the Baltic seafloor of southern Sweden.
The ship's amazing. The finds have been spectacular. So we've found a purse of concreted silver coins.
We learn how the application of a new scientific method in the analysis of a recent find has yielded surprising results.
Yeah, we've got a really amazing site, very exciting, for a lot of reasons. The place that we're diving on this wreck, it's in Sweden now, but funnily enough, it used to be in Denmark. But the borders have changed in the 1600s. And so now this Danish wreck that sank in Danish waters is in Sweden. And it's a warship. It's Gribshunden. It was the flagship of the Danish-Norwegian king, Hans. It sank in 1495 in the summer, in June. And, you know, context is everything in archaeology. And this is a particularly important ship because of the historical circumstances and the context in which it sailed.
I've read that it's been described as a floating castle. Tell us more about that, because that's fascinating.
These warships are often referred to as floating castles, and people as eminent as John Adams have published this particular term relating to this particular ship. So floating castle, you immediately think of a fortress as a military structure on the water, but Gribshunden was much more than that. It's not just the hard power. It's not just the artillery which it carried, and it was one of the first generation of ships purpose-built to carry artillery, but it's all the other functions that a land castle engages in. Those same functions are seen here on Gribshunden. So it's the seat of the king as he travels around throughout his realm and even outside of his realm. It's displaying not just those hard power aspects of pure military might, but also the soft power thing. So it's a seat of his authority. It's a seat of his prestige. He's inviting noblemen on board. He's inviting the clergy on board. They're traveling with him, and they're being treated to the same sorts of things that they would be experiencing in a land castle. So very good food, beautiful scenery, and all of the trappings of the throne.
And I've heard also incredible objects you're bringing up. Tell us more about some of them and one in particular that we're going to speak about today.
The ship's amazing. The finds have been spectacular. Because it's the Baltic, the wood itself of the ship is preserved. That's interesting because this is in that transitional period in the late 15th century when carvel construction techniques are being introduced. So it's a purpose-built warship, probably built in the Netherlands, and it's got clinker-built uppers. The superstructure is clinker-built. So interesting for its own right as a technical piece of ship construction, well-preserved in the Baltic. But the artifacts on board and that archaeological context are everything. The ship sank while Hans was sailing on it. He was going to Kalmar in Sweden to meet with the Swedish nobleman, and he was expecting to be elected king of Sweden and therefore fulfill his ambition to recreate the Nordic Union of Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. So he had loaded the ship with everything and everyone that he thought could impress and cow the Swedes into accepting his rule. So partly that meant professional soldiers, the famous Landsknecht, the mercenaries often hired from the German states, and all of their weapons and all of their armor. And we're finding that. We found multiple crossbows. We found mail armor remnants on the ship. We found daggers and other edged weapons. But we've also found some of those soft power things that are so impressive. So number one is a collection of spices and medicines. All of this is without archaeological precedent. Saffron, cloves, ginger, and large amounts of all of it. But also on board the ship was a fair amount of monetary wealth. So we've also found a purse of concreted silver coins.
Oh my gosh. So concreted, what does this look like? What does a concretion look like when you bring it up? And what have you done with it to discover what's inside it?
Well, this concretion, it's not big. It's not impressive. It's about the size of my thumb. And it's blackened, of course. But in this roughly cylindrical object, you can see the faint outlines, circular outlines of the coins. We couldn't break it apart. We couldn't mechanically separate the coins because it would have destroyed them. So we took it to the Danish Technical University and we performed micro CT scanning of it. And we got a rich data set that allowed us to actually see that there were at least the ghosts of these silver coins still extant within this concretion. The problem was I didn't know what I was looking at. We needed expert eyes.
Okay, what break down what that technique is. What does that do? Is that something they use in medicine?
It is, yeah. It's a micro-scale computed tomography. So it takes a series of X-ray images, which are then stacked together, and you can slice this data any way you want in three dimensions and work your way right through the entire concretion, see the insides of it.
Wow. Okay, so what did you see?
Well, we saw in this one large concretion over 100 coins. I'm sitting here with Dr. Gitta Ingvardsson, who works at the Lund Historical Museum here at Lund University, and she's a numismatics expert, an expert in old coins, ancient coins.
Well, we saw what we could see when we looked inside these concretions. We could see three stacks of coins tightly wrapped together. Perhaps they were deposited with some kind. They were wrapped in some kind of leather or cloth. And the work when I worked through the coins, segregating one coin from another, I could see that they were all the same type. All the 100 coins are a Danish silver coin called Kors Hvid. If you translate it directly, it would be Kors White. White is referring to the silver color of the coin, because it's quite a good silver coin, and Kors is referring to the reverse of the coin, where we find a shield divided in four parts by a cross. And then we have a legend around surrounding it, stating which city it was minted. And on the adverse of the coin, we have a crowned letter, either K for King Christian or King Christopher, or H for King Hans, and then also surrounded by these legends. It's the smallest nominal in the Danish currency, but it was a good silver coin. The size is about a pound, but much, much thinner, less than a millimeter thick were the coins. So it was quite difficult to segregate each coin from the next.
Wow, that's incredible. But it's the technology enabling you to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is incredible that we could. Normally, we would either not know what was in these concretions, or we would probably destroy most of the coins if we tried to separate them mechanically. But I actually succeeded in identifying more than 80% of the coins in the concretion. So we have a very good image of what it contained.
And what does this actually tell you? I mean, were the coins all minted somewhere in particular?
They were minted in the primarily in the Danish realm, in Norwegian, where Denmark and Norwegian had a monetary union. But what really surprised me when I looked at this coin hoard was that there was a lot of old coins in them, coins from Hans's predecessors. So we have here a coin hoard. We know it's a purse, so it's travel money from a person which was on board the Hans's ship. So we know it's active currency in opposition to like specially selected hoarded currency. So we know it's active currency, and we know from some of the other finds that you did on your excavations that this was probably a very high-ranking person traveling with King Hans. So, very close to King Hans. You might say that they were sanctioned by Hans. And normally, when we discuss medieval coin policy, you would suspect that a strong king-like Hans would like to dominate the coin circulation. He would like to control the coin circulation, because if you control the coin circulation, you can make money by debasing the silver quality of the coin. But as these are deposited near Hans, a person close to Hans, we can see that he accepted these old coins. So what we have been discussing is that it was probably a deliberate policy from Hans. He needed sufficient supply of coins to pay off his mercenaries. So he probably allowed these old coins to be in circulation.
Right. Brendan, can you add to that?
Yeah, one of the interesting things, I talked about how Gribbshunden technically is in a transitionary phase. It's not the medieval ship. It's not quite the early modern ship like Mary Rose. We're seeing the same kinds of transitions in the monetary policy as the economy of Northern Europe shifts from sort of a barter economy to a purely monetary economy. So having enough coins to pay your bills is all of a sudden essential. Some of Hans's bills are coming due to pay his professional army that he needs to face off the Swedes, because the Swedes aren't coming into this union willingly. They're kicking and screaming. He's doing it by force. He has to pay mercenaries. He needs a professional army. They require coins. So right in this moment, right in the summer of 1495, things are ramping up between Sweden and Denmark. War clouds are forming. Hans needs more money. He needs more soldiers. So right after Gribbshunden sinks, he starts to mint higher denomination coins. And then he starts to mint gold coins. And we see in the written records that the wages of these mercenaries, these Landsknecht, go steadily up from 2 gold coins a month to all of a sudden 5 gold coins a month by 1497. Really interesting time period. And we can see all of these changes reflected in the artifacts from Gribbshunden.
That's incredible. From a tiny thumb-sized concretion to this.
You might say that this little hoard reflects how war and conflicts influence the political and economic landscape of medieval Europe.
Thank you so much. That is great. You have a lot more to discover on the ship, I understand. So we're looking forward to hearing more in the future.
Yep. So far, we've excavated about 1%. It's going to deliver a stream of unimaginable archaeological resources, I'm sure.
It's truly amazing what you can glean from a clump of degraded old coins. We look forward to reporting on other artifacts from this intriguing wreck in the future. I hope you enjoyed this Dive and Dig news podcast brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, and I hope you will join us again soon. Thanks for listening.